Welcome to Partnering with Parents, brought to you by the Classical Academies. Join us every other Tuesday as we educate, encourage, and support parents in their role as the primary educator.
Well, I'm Cameron Curry, the CEO for the Classical Academies, and it's exciting to have another conversation today. We're going to be talking about 30 questions everyone must answer to build a meaningful life. And we'd like to welcome back to our program, Scott Schimmel.
Thanks, Cameron. It's good to be here. I think this is the third time, so I feel extremely honored and privileged to always talk with you.
Well, we're always having fun. So, Scott, for anyone who may not be familiar with you, cover some ground for us, give us your background, and how you spend your time.
Sure. I'm a husband, almost 20 years. I've got three kids. Now two of them are teenagers. I coach youth soccer, little girls soccer, and I think I finally figured it out, the secret for winning. Get good players. And then lately, I switched from calling myself a writer to calling myself an author now that it's officially, this book is published. So spent a lot of time working with the youth school, working inside schools, and with military veterans in transition as well.
Well, I will tell you, my daughter was a soccer star in middle school and high school. She's a very successful adult at this point. But it was funny, too, because I was that dad who would go to the games, get super excited, and she pulled me aside and she said, listen, you need to keep your iPod on your ears. Enjoy the game, Dad, and you can scream and yell when we get to the championship games. And so I was just like, okay, I will chill out. I will enjoy it all. Never got to
pretend
coach.
Like you don't know me.
Exactly. Just pretend. Exactly. Well, that's great. So you've got a new book, Critical Foundations, The 30 Questions Everyone Must Answer to Build a Meaningful Life, just came out. So what led you to write this?
Honestly, to try to solve my own problem. When shutdown quarantine happened now 2 years ago, all of a sudden I had two teenagers around all the time. And I think in hindsight, even though I've worked with kids for almost 20 years, I think in hindsight, I wasn't really prepared as a parent to have conversations with them. And that became the question that I had. How do I engage with them when they're pulling away from me? Mm-hmm. And I realized, like you were mentioning, me talking at them or to them wasn't very effective. In fact, it was like the opposite. And rather, what seemed to work more effectively was questions. And I'm fine with how was your day and what do you want to do tomorrow? Those kinds of questions. But I think like most parents, I want to have the right questions and right conversations with them. So I started writing really through the youth school, the weekly emails that I would send out for myself and for my kids with this curiosity. Are there better questions to ask that will lead to better conversations? And I kind of stumbled upon 30 of them. And I don't think, why 30? I wish there were 12. I wish there were five. I haven't found one of those 30 that I could cross off as being really important if what I care about is my kids building a meaningful life for themselves.
Well, I was just going to ask you about the 30 questions. So it's so interesting how you'll read different leadership blogs or different parent blogs, or, you know, everybody tries to boil down, you know, here's the three things you need to do today, or here's the 12 things you need to do. So how did you come up with 30? Did you originally have 45 and were able to cut them down? Or?
Yeah, it's not very marketable, is it? Like 30? I'm like, yep. So really looking through three significant themes, pillars: identity, purpose, and belonging are essentially kind of the framework that I started to think through. So identity, even just looking at that as a concept, what does that mean? And doing a ton of research, I think there's no real common definition out there. For someone to have a well-formed, defined identity, there's got to be things that they discover and figure out. So I really just started listing off the questions with this idea of if someone were able to answer these questions, would they then have a well-formed identity? And almost like working backwards, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So these questions like, what has failure taught you? I just, in processing my own life and doing a lot of research and working with teenagers for 20 years, it's hard to imagine going out into life with the kinds of things I think you and I would care about, courage, risk-taking, bravery. If you haven't experienced meaningful life lessons from failure. So just by asking that question, what has failure taught you? It deserves a response, and it implies that that's important and that's good that you learn from failure. So the 30 questions, there were probably 60, 70.
Okay.
And just crossing them off one at a time, like, there's other ways to ask that. And I really tried to whittle it down to, like I said, the 12 or the 15 would have been great. But there's just, I can't imagine crossing any of these questions off.
So when you talked about the three different areas, the three different pillars that you talked about, mm-hmm. did you identify 10 questions for each of those pillars?
No, I think there's more around identity. And, okay. and partially because of working with teenagers, that seems to be the primary thing that's happening during those adolescent years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, remember that book, Are You My Mother?
Right.
It's that Dr. Seuss book about this chick that's born, this little bird that's born, and the mother's not there off getting food. And the primary question that chick goes from animal to animal is, are you my mother? But underneath that are more profound questions that I think teenagers ask. Can you tell me who I am? Can you tell me why I'm here? Can you tell me how to be here well? And each one of the answers from the different animals is, no, I can't tell you. And I think the teenage years, those questions become really live and potent for a kid. Can you tell me who I am? Can you tell me how to be here well? And in many ways, all of adolescence is a search for identity. And on the front end, what you're trying to find, I think, is to fit in with some friends. Can, mm-hmm. can anyone just give me acceptance, or maybe not laugh at what I'm wearing today as a low bar? Can anyone like me or stand being around me? But I think there's even a deeper journey there of true acceptance, which can only come from when someone accepts your differences and what makes you unique, which is tricky. And I think too often teenagers will settle for a shallow form of belonging and friendship because they're just pleased enough to get some friends around them. So that search for identity, I think, really front loads those particular questions. So there's 10 questions, or 15, sorry, questions within identity to help a young person really figure things out.
Okay. All right. Well, as the father of three adult children, I will tell you that the empty nest years just rock. They're the best. But the challenge also is that we spend so much time pouring into our children that when they become adults, mm-hmm. then you're waiting for them to ask you, to invite you into some of their some mm-hmm. of their challenges or just into their lives and stuff. And so this time that you are investing in this book and investing in your children mm-hmm. really does pay off. I remember when Barb and I would intentionally stay away from yes or no questions around the dinner table. Mm-hmm. Because if it's too easy, and we wanted them to really engage around, what was the best part of your day, and then dig into mm-hmm. some of those things, or what did you struggle with today? That's not a yes, mm-hmm. that's not a no, that's
right.
something we'd want to know about. So are there, do you have a couple questions you could share?
Yeah, so from identity, you just nailed one. What do you struggle with? What was a struggle today?
Mm.
And I think behind that is a recognition that we all have weaknesses. And helping a young person figure those weaknesses out and then decide what to do with them. For instance, the kid might say math. I struggled with math today. Okay, well, what's the struggle though? Is it an innate ability that you lack, or is it study skills that you lack, or are you sitting around the wrong kids in the class? What is the problem and how do you learn how to navigate that? So, that speaks to I know who I am around self-awareness. For who I am and who I'm not. Another one would be, what are you thankful for? What are you grateful for? And that's something my family and we started to do right at the start of shutdown, this little simple exercise every night at dinner mm-hmm. that we called three good things. What are three good things that you're thankful for today? And the idea that you would have your own unique lens on what went well today and what you see and perceive speaks to the unique makeup of who you are. And it's also a really good habit to form. I really hope that my kids don't grow up as entitled folks.
Right.
And I would consider that a big failure for me. Mm-hmm. So I have to model it for them and continuously ask for them to be pointing out in their own lives where they're seeing things that are good and beautiful and true. And if they can, I think that habit can form over the years.
Well, and I think the other important thing that you know, children need to see is parents modeling that. So as you go around the dinner table, that you're willing to share what the struggle was today, or your wife is willing to share what the struggle was today. And it gives them that really, that point of authenticity that mom and dad are real, you know, they're struggling too, but they're also focused in on what's working, you know?
That's right. And yeah, sometimes that's obviously hard to share the inner stuff of what's going on. I think growing up, I got to one of the biggest privileges I had was listening to my parents talk about their day. And my sister and I knew that it wasn't time for us to talk. It was time for us to listen. And I look back on that and I think there's been a shift generationally where, and I've made the shift myself, I think to my fault, has been to focus exclusively on my kids and ask them about their days. And just in the past probably year, I started to realize, I think they actually need to hear me share more about what I'm going through. Mm-hmm. Watch me process things, watch me struggle, watch me navigate through difficult relationships or stress. When I think I got this message, no, life is all about them. That's what a good parent does. And I'm realizing there's somewhere in the middle there for sure that I need to come back to.
Well, the one thing that I noticed over the years was, as we look back at our parents' relationships, and, you know, some of those were toxic, some of those were positive, and just the simple things. I remember that the father was always served first when dinner came, and then you flip that around, and you see what's going on today. It's usually the kids that are, let's serve the kids first, let's get them taken care of, then mom and dad, you come to the end of the line, and you get what's left over. You know, and it's some of those simple things we can switch up if we want to. So interesting.
Yes.
Well, so your book does talk about reflection and integration, or actually building the relevant self-awareness. So are these skills that can be taught? And if so, how would we do that?
Yeah, I think absolutely it can be taught. For instance, a big chunk of the work that we do through the U School is with military special forces, special operators, people like Navy SEALs that you'd see on TV or watch on movies. And these are folks that they'll tell you they're not known for their inner reflection about their experiences or emotions.
Right.
And we've learned over the past 8 years working with them that it is a learned skill, no matter who you are or your personality. And I think some people are more predisposed to it. I know I was. I was a pretty reflective kid growing up, always was. But I think even for the real extroverted, outgoing, maybe distracting kid or person, it might just look different. It might not look like sitting down with a journal, but it might look like taking a walk with a friend and processing things out loud. So absolutely can be taught. And I think it starts with, if you're a parent listening, it starts with a really simple question to ask your kids. It sounds like this: what are you thinking? What are you thinking about? What's going on? Mm-hmm. And to not be satisfied with the first answer, even if you've got a teenager that's grunting at you or irritable, there's always more underneath the surface. And I think oftentimes me and my friends and my kids, we're not aware of what's underneath the surface, which is why I need someone to guide me there. And that's, I think, the difference that makes reflection a skill. It's being guided towards reflection. Otherwise, it can turn into worry or just rumination or navel gazing. Thinking about yourself isn't necessarily productive unless you have some really good prompts and questions.
I totally would agree. And the thing that I would add to that would be, I just know with when we had our teenagers and there's cooking going on, there's dinner happening, there's preparation going on, I know that Barb and I were really good about just asking a question with our back, like I'm over there at the stove cooking, someone's at the sink, you're not making eye contact, just ask one of these questions, one of these 30 questions, and you know what, they're not feeling the pressure of you're sitting across from me, staring at my eyeballs, wanting something from me right now.
Yes, that's right.
You know,
that's
it's all about the setup. So out of all the 30 questions, what do you feel is the hardest for most people to answer, and are there a couple people get stuck on?
You know, I think if I were to err on any of those questions, especially for a young person, it would be the questions around friendship and relationships. because I think you can, like, if you remove one of these big pillars, if you lack purpose in your life, and yet you have people with you that know you and you depend on, and there's just this shared love and mutual understanding, I think you can actually live a really decent, good life. However, if you're clear about your identity, you know who you are, you know why you're here, you've got meaningful work, and there's nobody to share that with, I think that's a life that's worse. That's a life not well off. Mm-hmm. So I always try to err on the side of these conversations around relationships. And there's some hard questions in there. Questions like, how do you repair relationships? How do you connect with others who are different? What do you do to connect with people? How do you share your story and what's going on inside your life with other people? Those are hard. Those are really hard questions, I think, because they're more personal and they're a little bit more vulnerable. And there's a lot more risk involved when it comes to other people around. It's one thing to process your values and your beliefs, but it's another thing to start sharing those and interacting with them and contributing to a team, recognizing how you come across to others. Like, those are tricky questions. So, you know, as a parent, as an educator, that's where I think the most emphasis ought to be put. And it's not the stuff that we typically teach in a seminar or a workshop or a classroom, but it's the most important stuff.
Well, I think, I don't even know where you're at about this, but I've always been troubled with the amount of men that don't have relationships, strong male relationships, you know, beyond their marriages. And their wife seems to be, you know, and maybe they've got, they're involved in clubs and church and, you know, community, but they don't really have some very strong male friends that are in their lives and stuff. And so I know for myself, my college roommates, and I've got a couple truly best friends that are a part of my life, and my kids, you know, it's like Uncle John, it's Uncle Ron, you know, and it's so important that they see us dads modeling positive, healthy relationships as well.
You know, I 100% agree. And I've asked many students over the last 20 years to talk about and share what they've learned from their parents about friendships. And I've heard that from hundreds and hundreds of male students, male kids, who have said, I don't know if my dad has friends. And I agree. And if you're, if belonging and relationships is such a critical part of life, and a kid isn't seeing that model, I think that's a huge tragedy. And it occurred to me probably 4 or 5 years ago, not too long ago, that I have similar relationships, I think, that you're talking about, college friends, people I consider brothers, but I wasn't necessarily giving my kids the opportunity to see the relationship that I have with them, particularly my son, because I would talk with him on the phone or I'd go hang out with my friends, but they weren't necessarily, we weren't camping together. We weren't doing a lot of the things where my kids would see that. In fact, they might grow up and say, I don't know who my dad's friends were. I heard names, but I didn't know them. So about 4 or 5 years ago, I called 3 guys that I love and I want my son to know. And we strategically, I said, hey, could my son and I spend time with you? And the answer, of course, was yeah.
Well, know, better anytime. Be yes, exactly. Or I wouldn't have called you. Come on. Yeah.
That's right. And so I made it a really intentional point, and I still do, to spend time with each one of those 3 guys and my son a few times a year. And every single time we hang out, we go to a Padres game or go fishing or go even just have a meal together, I will turn to my son at that point and say, hey, this is John. This is Caleb. This is Dave. This is Charlie. These are guys that I want you to call when you don't feel like you can talk to me. Mm. And then my friends will always jump in and say, yeah, your dad's an idiot sometimes. you're gonna want to call me.
Please,
he doesn't get it.
Let's talk about your dad. Give me a call. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll say things like, you know, you might find things in my life that you want to emulate or not. And if you don't, I would love for you to look towards these men and find things in their lives, how they do marriage, how they do generosity, how they do work. And I don't think there could be a more valuable gift that my son could have than watching and learning from that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We need to model positive male relationships, friendships, so our kids can catch that vision and also value that and want that for themselves. It's huge. Totally huge. It's healthy. Yeah. It's very, very healthy. Well, well, Scott, your book seems to be really targeted toward teens, but I'm guessing it's a really valuable tool for parents.
Yeah, I think in both ways. It's hard to do more than one thing with a book or anything, but I do hope that as parents read it, they'll recognize, and I'll say this probably 50 times inside the book at least, before you ask these questions of your kids, try to answer them yourself. And in many ways, if that's all you did, and you didn't have any of the discussions or ask these questions to your kids, I think your kids would be not just better off, but really well off. And that's what I've heard from so many parents over the years sharing these questions. You know, I don't know if I can answer these.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where it starts. And you've said that already in this conversation. It starts with modeling. It starts with showing. So I want to make sure that there's a clear roadmap for that, which is why I wrote the book for me and for other parents. And you can use it like a journal, like a curriculum to go through a question a day, a question a week, a question a month, and work through these until you feel like you have clear answers. And as you do that, I think your kids will see that. They'll see what your answers are, and they'll watch it. And obviously, life is better caught than taught in a lecture format. So, yeah, in many ways, I think it's probably a book for you and I more than it is for kids, quite frankly. But then you get to turn around and use it with kids as well.
I love that. So, Scott, where can we get a copy of the book?
It's on Amazon. I don't know if you've heard of Amazon.
I've heard that's a small bookseller. It's brand new. yeah. It's like the river, everybody. The Amazon.
Starts with an A. Yeah. It's all on Amazon, and there's a curriculum that goes with it. Also, we're doing a weekly podcast where I'm not only talking about each one of those questions in further depth, but also inviting a guest on, typically a friend, that's really modeling the answer to that question well.
And love
so
that.
I know a lot of parents are using it to listen to in the car, their kids, for example. If you've got them in the car for 15 minutes, there's a 15-minute conversation to listen to on the radio.
Well, Scott, when we're on Amazon, give us the name of the book again, please.
Critical Foundations, the 30 questions everyone must answer to build a meaningful life.
Love that. Well, Scott, thank you for your time today.
Thanks, Kim.
Partnering with Parents is brought to you by the Classical Academies, a group of award-winning public charter schools serving over 4,500 students in Southern California. Suggest a future episode or advertise with us by visiting classicalacademy.com/podcast. Consider subscribing to our channel, leaving us a review, and supporting our Patreon page. Thanks for listening.